Hi, and welcome to SpondyCast, where we bring together the best medical minds, thought leaders, scientists, patients, and caregivers to inform and inspire the spondylitis community. I'm your host, Jill Miller, living my best spa life, knowing that how we meet today has the power to change everything going forward. Please note that the information provided in this podcast should not be considered medical advice. We do encourage all listeners to consult their healthcare professionals for medical concerns. Thank you for listening, and we hope you find our discussion today enlightening.
Hi, and welcome to SpondyCast. Today, our guest is Donzel Leggett. We're going to talk about professional success with chronic illness and practical strategies for advancing your destiny with spondyloarthritis. All of our listeners know that managing a career while living with spondyloarthritis comes with a unique challenge. From navigating unpredictable symptoms to balancing workplace expectations and personal well-being. In this episode of SpondyCast, leadership expert and my good friend, Donzel Leggett, joins us to share practical approaches for building confidence in advancing both personally and professionally while managing a chronic illness. He will also discuss key elements of his leadership model and how individuals can apply these principles to navigate work, health, and personal growth with clarity and purpose. I want to tell you a little bit about our guest first. With more than three decades of leadership experience at Fortune 200 companies, Donzel is the principal of Destiny Development Delta, LLC, where he focuses on executive leadership development. He is also the award-winning author of Make Your Destiny Happen, Take Control of Your Life with the Destiny Development Model, Delta Model for Transformational Success, and he is recognized for his strategic vision and commitment to mentorship. Donzel is passionate about coaching and developing leaders worldwide. His purpose is clear: to help people unlock their full potential and become the best leaders they can be. He is a proud Purdue graduate and former academic All-America football player. And he now splits his time between Florida and Chicago with his wife, Tracy. Okay, that's quite an intro. And I get for clip because I care about you. Like, I love you so much. Welcome to SpondyCast. I'm so excited to have you.
I'm very happy to be here. What a tremendous cause that the podcast is fighting for. Not only awareness, but helping people to work through very difficult and painful circumstances and still live the best lives that they can live, which is fantastic. And it's always great to see you, Jill. Every time I'm with you, I'm more inspired by everything that you do, all the things you're striving to change in this world. Every day you're fighting the good fight, and it's very, very inspiring. So thank you.
Well, thank you. The admiration is mutual. And I want to give our listeners a little bit of background, how we know each other. We came to know each other through what I'd call work, right?
A mutual friend.
Yes. We should give a shout out to Stuart today.
Yes, absolutely.
And he put us in touch about 6 months ago, and listening to you talk about the work you've done over your career and having read the book now, it makes so much sense to me. And I hope it does as we walk through some of this with our listeners, because what I found and have found in my own journey, which has been, had its ups and downs, just like a lot of people listening and a lot of people in life, it made me take a step back and apply some really interesting and different approaches where I actually was getting results. And I think one of the things with a chronic illness is you're kind of always trying to beat the disease, hack the disease, and really still, sometimes you have to reset expectations. So in your life, and this kind of helped me in this chapter get a little bit back on track in my own. So I want to just first ask you, if you want to tell us a little bit about your journey.
Yeah, thank you, Jill. And in the book, I talk a little bit. I wrote the book in a way to introduce my leadership model, but also to kind of tell my story a little bit. and some of the ups and downs. But I'm originally from Key West, Florida. A lot of people, when I tell them that, they don't think that people actually live there. They think it's just tourists go there. But there are people that live there. My family actually immigrated to Key West from the Bahamas back in the 1850s. So we've been there a long time. We're real conchs. We're not these new freshwater conchs. We're real conchs that have been in Key West a long time. It's an island, and it's a very unique place. Very unique place because a lot of tourists come there. But the United States had a large naval military establishment in the island since the 1950s. And so it's, I'd say, more current. Even before that, there was military presence, but really big naval base installation there. So that brought a lot of people from the United States. And there's a lot of different, I mean, as an island, it's unique in terms of lifestyles. And so our group were a lot of different people, a lot of different accents, a lot of different cultures. We had the largest gay population per capita in the United States for a long time. So I grew up around a lot of different people and really learned the value of really seeing every individual and valuing every individual, no matter what they look like, how they talk, what their lifestyles might be. And that really informed a lot of my life going forward. From there, as Jill said, I went to Purdue University, which is almost 2,000 miles away, but a world away in terms of culture. So everything I described about Key West, Purdue was the exact opposite. Very cold, not a lot of different diverse people, but a great learning environment to challenge me to really embrace what higher learning was all about, and playing football and doing both of those at the same time. Very challenging. I had a lot of different experiences there. I learned a lot about what great leaders should do, even more so what great leaders shouldn't do to influence people. And I learned that sometimes leadership opportunities present themselves and you're not maybe ready at that time. But if you learn from that and really challenge yourself and get to know yourself, you can be prepared the next time. And so when I joined, started my career after I graduated from Purdue, I recognized that I had leadership opportunities that maybe I didn't take advantage of when I was playing football, when I was in university. But I'd really done the hard work of getting to know myself, getting to understand what I truly wanted out of life, the impact that I could make in people's lives while also achieving the life that I wanted and achieving the well-being and balance that I wanted in my life. And that started me on this career track in leadership, where I started sort of climbing the career ladder at a large Fortune 200 company. Ended up at the end of my career leading the entire international supply chain operation. At one time, I had responsibility for over 40 countries, over 10,000 employees, and found out that my style of leadership and the model that I had been using for a long time, not only to guide my life, but to drive differential results in every organization I was a part of, worked no matter the person spoke English, Mandarin, or Portuguese. It worked whether they were part of a traditional sort of work style or different style, whether they were in Europe or Asia or Latin, South America or North America or Australia for that matter, because it all came down to valuing each individual as a person, helping them identify what they truly wanted, what mattered to them, and then helping them build the confidence and, more importantly, the plan to make it happen. And that's what kind of led me to write the book and why I'm trying to spread my message that everyone can make their destiny happen.
I love that. And it's you talk a bit in the book about the leadership piece sometimes comes from inside us. It doesn't just come from what's coming at us. And I love that. And I think many of our listeners, and I'm sure you've run across this in your journey, life doesn't always turn out the way we think. But what is for you? I know for you, the life plan piece is super important. And like, what is that first step into it? Or do you want to talk a little bit about your framework before we get into that step?
So, I as part of that, I did a very quick summary of my story. There was a moment in my life where I realized that I needed to be very clear and disciplined what I was trying to do with my life. And I was about 24 at the time. I was pretty young, but I knew that I needed to make some very clear plans going forward. But I had an epiphany that for me to do that, I had to really get in touch with myself. I had to really understand, what was I really trying to do? Where do I really want to go? And I wasn't sure how to do that at the time, but I knew that I had to, because I figured it was going to take a lot of hard work and there were going to be a lot of ups and downs. And like you mentioned, Jill, there were going to be some paths that I was probably going to have to go down or be forced down that maybe I wasn't prepared for it. Maybe I didn't think it was going to happen that way. And I knew I was going to have the emotional resiliency to deal with that. So I actually really spent a lot of time, you know, not meditating, but just thinking about who I really am and what my strengths are. What are the things I wasn't that good at? Really looking myself in the mirror and doing a full assessment and becoming comfortable with that. Becoming comfortable that I wasn't, you know, perfect at everything, but I also wasn't terrible at everything. That there were some things that I could do differentially that others couldn't. And there were things I had to get better at. But once I became comfortable with that, then I said, you know what? That's me. And I love that. And that started allowing me to believe in myself. And once I had that feeling that I could be authentically me, because I know what I'm all about, and I could be confident in that, then I said, well, then what do I want to do? So I thought, what if I was 65 years old? Again, I was 24, 25. I thought 40 years later or down the road and said, if I'm looking back at my life, what would I think? Would I be proud of myself? Would I be happy? What would my family, what would their circumstance be? What would people think about me? What would my legacy be? And I just started writing down thoughts from those questions I asked myself. And from that, I started creating a vision of where I wanted my life to be. And that was the beginning essence of that life plan. I then backed it every 5 years till I came all the way back to 25. And that allowed me to kind of build a step-by-step plan to get there. And I remember thinking to myself, in 40 years, there's going to be a lot that's going to change. Does it really make sense to have a plan? But then I thought through, it's always better to have a plan and then make changes off the plan as I change, as the environment changes, than to have none at all. The other thing I thought that was really good about that is I could sit down with my girlfriend at the time, we weren't married, and let her see what I'm thinking so that she can decide, does she want to be a part of that? But also so she can decide, does it complementary to what she wants to do? That was so important to us before we got married for me to have that life plan, to review with her so she understood exactly what I was thinking, where I was going. And so as I get back to your question, what's the first thing that's important about building a life plan? Whether you build one as detailed as I did or not, or just have an idea, it's really to spend that time with yourself. And I know that's hard sometimes. Sometimes we don't want to confront the things that maybe we're not great at, or that they're not great about us, that maybe we don't want to, you know, admit that there are some things that we could do better. For some of us, we don't want to admit how good we are. Some people can't accept that they're really good at certain things. But you got to spend that time with yourself and be comfortable with that and recognize that if you don't know yourself better than anyone else, who does? And if once you know yourself and you can build that confidence in yourself, again, who's going to be more confident in you than you? And that's important, because if you don't have a plan for your life, who does? That's what it comes down to. A lot of us work for companies and we're establishing the strategy, the vision for the company. CEOs like Jill, that's all they work on, the vision, the CEO for the strategic plan for their company. And they have teams of people who are helping them with this. even if you're not the CEO, if you're someone well down the organization, I guarantee you're working on some project to move the strategic plan, the vision of the company forward. Who's working on your vision? Who's working on your strategic plan? You as an individual? Nobody. So if you're not doing it, if you're not acting as the CEO of your life, who's doing it? That's why it's so important to start off with, what are you all about? What are you willing to sacrifice to get what you want? And for those of you who are fighting this chronic illness, that's part of it. You have to recognize that there's going to be sacrifice to get to where you want to go. But if you don't have that initial conversation, if you don't build that perseverance, resiliency, that understand that you are the leader of your life, you are the boss of your life, and you determine and make your destiny happen. If you don't set that stage, it won't happen for you.
And
so that's the first step.
And this begs a question, and maybe it's down further, but when you think you've got the plan and then it all falls apart, and sometimes would you agree we have to, I think a lot of people who listen to this podcast have experienced this, where you think you have a plan, it all falls apart and you meet a new side of yourself, which is the part of, it may be resilience, it may be the chronic disease piece, it may be a new way of different mobility. And when you do have the plan, I'm sure yours has fallen off track at times and you have to come back. It's a bit of a, probably like a Candyland board for most of us. How do you ensure that your essence stays on track as your life unfolds?
Yeah. Don't let other people determine your plan. I mean, one of the top failures I see is most people, or a lot of them, don't really establish what I call an authentic plan or an authentic destiny goal. It's usually something that their parents kind of did, and so they saw that, and they don't have a better idea, or they just assume my mom did it, my dad did it, that's what I should do. Is it really authentic? Probably not. It's not really maybe what they wanted to do. Or they're not really sure what they want, and they hear an idea from a friend, and because they don't have a good idea, they follow that plan. So if you have a plan that's not authentic, first of all, it's probably going to at some point fall apart. Or if it doesn't fall apart, you start getting to a point where you just realize, I'm not happy doing this. You know, both of those aren't really good endings. So again, I'd get back to establish what really you want. And the reason why that's important is because when you get knocked down, when it starts not going correctly, if it truly is an authentic goal that you want, something that you have determined is your true north, you generate the energy to get back up and fight for it. But if it's not, you kind of get mired in this cycle of just kind of, you know, going in circles, you know, or finding it difficult to just keep going, you know. And so that's kind of what I had to come to a point where I thought I had an idea of what I wanted, but it really wasn't authentically mine. And it took me a long time to get to that point. And it took me actually getting hurt and injured and facing pain and difficult circumstances where I had to determine, I write about this in the book, am I willing to sacrifice what it's going to take to make this happen?
And that was your college football career, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And ultimately, I had to ask myself the question, is this what you really want? Are you willing to sacrifice this much? And I ultimately had to answer the question, that's not what I wanted. It was what other people may have wanted or expected from me, but it wasn't truly what I wanted. So when I finally made that call and moved into a thought process of what do I really want and determined that and made that call, you know, I want to be a leader. I want to be someone who can make strategic decisions. I want to be an executive at a Fortune 500 company. I believe I can really do well in that type of role. And that's really what I want from a career standpoint, not who I am. Who I am is not what my career is, but that's what I'm gunning for my career. Then I can make the sacrifices. But what was really important was, again, separating a career choice from who I am. And what I wanted was to be able to make an impact on the world. I wanted to be a good father. I wanted to be a good husband. I wanted to be a good person that my friends could count on. I wanted to be someone who could impact our community. So my job was only one piece of that. So when I had to make choices around that job or that career, I felt free. I never felt locked in because it was just a step to get to my ultimate where I wanted to go, which was making that impact in the community, with my family, with my friends, being a leader that can help people. So I would ask you and everyone listening, what is really your true north? And is it something that truly comes from deep inside you? If it is, yes, you're going to get knocked down. Yes, there are going to be failures. I articulate, I failed. I have lost. I have, I've quit. I've done all those things. But it never took me off getting to where I want to go long term, because that was my true north. And so I said, you know what? It's time to learn. Recognize that failure is the fastest path to learning, and learning's the fastest path to winning. Because if you're continuing to progress,
keep that again.
Failure is the fastest path to learning, and learning's the fastest path to winning.
I love that.
Absolutely. Because learning gives you the continuous fuel to want to do more and to prepare yourself for changes that come your way, to keep yourself sharp, to keep you rejuvenating, and to avoid regressing. Because if you're not progressing, you are regressing. There is no staying the same. There is no maintaining status quo. That does not exist. That's a falsehood. You're either progressing or regressing. You're either moving forward or you're moving backwards. You're either ascending or descending. Embracing failure and learning allows you to ascend.
I love that. I'm going to ask, I've got 100 more questions, but I'm going to ask the next one, which is when you talk about a leader and a leader of your own life.
Yeah.
In your model, what qualities does that leader have that are common across anyone who wants to call themselves a leader?
Yeah. A couple of them I've already alluded to. It starts with authenticity. You have to start with, do you really know yourself and are you willing to be authentic with yourself? Can you do that? Because if you can do that, if you're truly authentic, then you can be a confident yourself and assured in yourself. Authenticity allows you to stand. Assuredness allows you to stand strong when winds blow in your face, when the storms come and you get knocked down and you get back up because you're confident in your authentic self. So authenticity and assuredness first. That allows you then to be accountable and to act. Leaders take on accountability when others don't want it. There's a reason why most people would rather not be the leader. They'll say, I'd love to be the leader, but when it comes down to it and they got to sign that dotted line, nah, I think I'll pass on that. Because leaders have to be accountable. When all else fails, you can't blame 1,000 people. At some point, you got to blame the one who's the leader. So are you willing to be accountable for yourself, for your actions? Call out when you're wrong and do something about it, and then take action. Leaders take action. Leaders are willing to step in, you know, when others won't. There's an old parable with wise men or fools step in where wise men fear to tread. That's true, unless the person who's stepping in has done some research, and understands that if you don't step forward, stepping backward, you're falling off the cliff. At some point, you got to move forward. You can't just keep standing back as the wise man might want to. So yeah. So the leader has to be authentic and assured, that be willing to be accountable and take action for themselves and for others. Then they have to be able to interact with others in a very differential way by being accessible and showing adoration. This is where it gets really hard. Are you willing to give of yourself? The first four were all about you. It's all about your authenticity, your assuredness, holding yourself accountable, taking action for yourself. But now, leader has to say, I'm going to be accessible to others. I'm going to let other people in. And in fact, I'm going to go seek them out. Great leaders don't wait for people to come to them. They don't have an open door waiting for people to come. You heard that before? I have an open door policy. Yes. Great leaders go to people because they know a lot of people are afraid, shy, you know, bashful. Some of them don't even know they need help. So great leaders go to them and they ask, how are you doing? What can I do to help? You know, I had colleagues that would never ask that question. You want to know why?
Leaders who would never ask. They didn't want to be bothered, I think.
They did not want to have to deal with someone else's problem. Mm-hmm. I saw it as a leader that all my people, their problems are my problems. It's my job to help them. And yes, they may give me a personal issue that's difficult for me to hear and understand. But if they're distracted by that and they're working in the middle of third shift, what do you think is going to happen? They have no one to talk to. So right. I will go to them, be accessible to them. Don't wait for them to come to me. And then I would show people adoration, love, care. So people felt that I had their back, that I had their front, that they were in my heart, that I would do whatever it took to help them. And yeah, I had to make some tough decisions. Don't get me wrong. But everyone in my organization knew that when I'm making tough decisions, it's not because the business just said, let's just do it, bottom line. I've tried to figure out a way to do it in the best possible way to take care of as many people as I possibly could. They believe that. Yeah. And I got many stories in the book that articulate that. So that's what I would say when I think about a leader. It all starts there. Then you can get into how well can you articulate a vision and can you engage people? All those things are great. But if you can't be authentic with yourself and confident in yourself, if you can't hold yourself accountable to take action, and if you can't be accessible to people and show people love that you're supposed to be accountable for, how can you lead?
Yeah. And it's interesting. I mean, your career and your work spans, it's as diverse as Key West, right?
Yes.
Spans the globe. And yes. As you move through that, I mean, and there are days, I think a lot of us have a hard time keeping all of that in check and being able to project it and actually genuinely care. I'm astounded. The last probably 5 to 6, 7 years, more so than any other time in my life, the number of people, like you said, that just have the open door policy, but don't have the, I'm going to go find you if I think you're drowning policy. Yes. And it's also to me a little bit disconcerting that, you know, when you face a chronic disease, and I'm sure a lot of people have been through this, and you are an excellent example of someone we need more of in the world in this context. But when you have something like this, there's often the people immediately, I think in the workplace it happens a lot, people immediately decide they don't want to deal with the fact that you have something that could be chronic, and they step back. I saw that in my own experience, not professionally as much as in other parts of my life, but when I finally did ask for help professionally, it was there, and it was the greatest gift I ever got in my ability to keep stepping forward. Yes. And I think there is, it's a really difficult situation. And I know we're talking on this hour to both leaders and people who may not have gotten to that place yet.
Yeah.
In their own plan. And why do you see people, or the big reasons why people will fail at their ability to transform into a leader? Do you think it's that authenticity is the first, that yeah. first step is just, if you can't get that and you're just done?
I really do. I think that not spending the time to truly assess who you are, get to know who you are, like who you are, love who you are, and then generate the confidence in that. That's definitely the first part. And again, I remember when I was a kid, and that was a long time ago, but you know, there used to be this thing, if you see someone talking to themselves, people think something's wrong with them. I don't know if they remember that at all, but I always thought that was the stupidest thing I'd ever heard, at least from my standpoint, because I talked to myself all the time when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And I talk to myself all the time now. I've never stopped talking to myself. I've always been my number one conversation person. Just, you know, talking through issues, talking about how do I think about things, talking about, you know, what do I want my future to be? But also just kind of getting to know myself. I'd ask myself, what do you think about this? Why do I think like that? And I just always thought that was awesome that I could do that. And I would always wonder, why do people think that's a negative thing? That's a great thing. And I think a lot of, you know, we hear so much about you. Again, I said this earlier, people should meditate. Yes, meditation is good. It really helps you reduce stress, manage your well-being. That's great. But talking to yourself, having a sit down with yourself, to me is more important. And I said this earlier, remember, there's hundreds and thousands of people working on organizational vision and strategy. And many of you do that in whatever small thing or big thing you do for your job. You're the only one that's doing that for you. How many meetings do you have talking about vision, strategy, projects to move your organization forward? How many meetings are you having with yourself to talk about, am I being the leader I can be?
Yeah. What, I mean, this is one. Yeah, I mean, you're catching me in a moment, because I think you remember I got halfway through the book, and halfway through there's this, if people who are listening aren't familiar with what a SWOT is, it is an exercise where you look at your strengths and weaknesses, and then you look at internally, and then you yes. also can take a look externally at opportunities for yourself and threats to your well-being or threats to your plan maybe. And I do SWOTs all the time in my life, in my job. And I sat down and did mine for the first time. I mean, and I've had a long career already. First of all, I was a puddle, right? It took a lot. I was like, I just remember kind of sobbing through it when I got it done, and I like printed it off, and I was like, oh, okay. There are some things here that I can't believe have been blind spots for 25 years. And many times since that, I'm going to be honest, I haven't finished my life plan, but which I think I promised I would. I'm getting there, but it's brought up a number of things where I've been in situations since doing that. And I think to myself, oh, this is that thing I do that I identified in my SWOT that lands me wiped out because I give beyond my ability to give, or I pack so many things into the schedule that there's no time, that I override when I should be in the gym, or I don't prioritize that, or I put everything on the calendar, But from a well-being perspective, I don't put going to the gym or meditating or, and it was funny to see some of, and how simple some of these things are. So I think the thing I want to get to too in this life plan side of it is, right, you've got to sort of meet yourself. And I think we all talk to ourselves with, like, I've heard the same thing you've heard. We talk about people who are, I don't want to offend anyone, but like people who don't talk to themselves, walking down the street, do talk, because it's negative self-talk generally. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it was you that said it to me or somebody was like, would you treat any of your friends like you talk to would you talk to any of your friends or your family like you talk to yourself? And I think that we all, I mean, there's a constant loop going on. So I appreciate that you do it too.
Absolutely.
But let's talk about routine a bit, because I think this is a big one. And I think especially for people who may have to reconfigure some of the plan, like how does routine fit into getting there?
So I mentioned, what's the top failure mode? It usually is one of the top, not being authentic with what you really want, but very close to the top is what I call not being disciplined and sustaining activation, or creating a routine that you can follow every day to achieve small milestones and goals that lead you to medium milestones and goals, and eventually big milestones and goals that take you to where you want to go. Very few things in this life that's worth achieving you can do in a day or in a minute, or in an hour. It takes time to get there, but it takes routine every single day, little bit. It's kind of like the idea you can't eat a whale, right? Unless you do it bite by bite, right? Or an elephant. I can't remember the analogy.
It's an elephant, but we'll take whale since you're from Key West.
yes. So this idea of creating a routine, and I like to, a lot of people say, well, how am I going to do that? There's no time. Everyone talks that there's no time in the day. That's a falsehood. There's a lot of time if you use it. But if you don't use it, you will lose it. Because from the point we're born, we're running out of time. Time is the most valuable and precious resource we have in this world. I tell the story, that I have a gold ring. My wedding ring is a special diamond cut. It's very unique. I'd hate to lose it. But if I did, I could buy more gold. It'd be a lot, but I could buy it. And I could find a jeweler somewhere. I'm sure there's a guy skilled or a lady skilled who could recreate this ring. There's gold that's still being mined in this world. It's finite. Yeah. We know eventually it'll run out, but we're still mining it, and we have a lot around. Same thing with diamonds. Even Bitcoin, they said, is the most finite resource of financial world, because there's only 21 million ever going to be minted. You can still buy them if you want. You can go on the market. It might cost you a lot, okay? But the 43 minutes that you've been listening to this podcast, you will never get back. I don't care who you are. I don't care how much money you have. So the question is, how effective, how disciplined are you with using your time, and how effective are you for mining for more time? So I assess every day and every week on time, because I know it's my most valuable resource. And I'm making trade-offs to the things that are less important to the things that are more important. Well-being is one of the most important things for me to feel better, to feel my best, to be my sharpest. I want to maximize my life at a quality level. So I know if I want to build my business, if I want to continue to write books, if I want to go out and give a speech on a book, if I want to be energized and inspirational on Jill's podcast today, I had to make sure I got the right amount of sleep. I had a good breakfast. I worked out yesterday. I did the things that are important for my well-being. And I mined the time, or I created more time in my day to also get the small milestones on track to meet my business plan this year that are going to keep me on track for my 5 and 10 year plan for my business, that are going to keep me on track for the legacy I want to leave and how I'm impacting people. So creating that routine, making those trade-offs, and then executing it. Again, having the holding yourself accountable to actually do it. Very, very, very important. And again, if you're not the one holding yourself accountable, if you're not the CEO of your life, if you're not taking the lead, if you're not doing it for the reasons that are authentic to you, it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
I know that with spinal arthritis, it's very important to stay active. I don't have it, but I have a lot of joint issues from playing football. There have been times in my life where I was in so much pain I couldn't walk. I understand that I got to fight through that every day. Small things it started with. There was a point where I was 100 pounds overweight. I had to lose that weight. It took small actions every single day. Disciplined, don't miss, make the trade-off. So mind for time. It's the most valuable resource in the world. Take the leadership of your life and make the trade-offs. Mine for time. People mine for gold. They mine for diamonds because they're supposed to be precious materials. Mine for rare earth metals. The most precious commodity in this world is your time, because you don't know, I don't know how much we have left. So I use my time and mine for it every single day.
Okay. You're making me like rewind. Not, there's never a minute wasted with you though. I want to talk about two things. Personal connections and mentorship.
Yes.
So
two of my favorite topics.
Yes, I know. And then we're going to get into even more fun topics. Personal connection.
Yes.
So important as part of being a leader and being authentic. How do you ensure that everyone you meet feels meaningful? What's your trick?
It's not a trick. The first thing I'm going to say, you know, and I, you know, I hate for people when they listen to this, they're going to be like, man, this guy keeps saying the same thing, but it's the absolute truth. You have to authentically know and believe in yourself. And I do. And I authentically like people. I love people. I think people are great. And yeah, there's some bad people in the world. Don't get me wrong. And yeah, there's some people that maybe I'm not going to get along with. But I really believe that most people are good. And I really believe I'm better off having them in my network. And I really believe that by maintaining connection with them, I'm helping them in some way, and I'm helping myself.
Yeah.
And I want that authentic connection to be there. So what is that? How does that, if it's really an authentic connection, then I want to reach out. I want to keep connected. I want to make sure I'm going through and say, okay, when's the last time I reached out? In fact, there was a guy I reached out today who has a chronic illness, not this specific one, but it's a very serious chronic illness. I worked with him 25 years ago. And I reached out to him today because he was on my mind, because I know he's still fighting that illness. And last I talked to him was about 3 months ago. And he wrote me back saying, not everyone checks on him. I'm one of the few people that do. So I made a difference for him, but he made a difference for me. Because remember, I told you one of my objectives is to make a difference in the world with my friends, with my network. And when you do that, at least for me, that gives me fuel. That gives me energy.
Yeah.
To know that I'm making a difference. So maintaining these connections and seeing the impact that I can make by continuing to uplift people uplifts me, gives me more energy to keep fighting.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I do know what you mean. And I think it becomes, I think it's a habit you can build too. I think we don't often think about things that way. And there was a period in my life where I
I love people. I've always loved people. I've always wanted to be connected to people.
Yeah.
I lose my mind if I'm not around people for like 12 hours is about my max before I need to go find a person. And there was a point that where I didn't want to be around people. And I used to have to convince myself that every time I met someone, I would say this little, I call it like the 5 second meditation. There was a piece of insert, whatever your preference is, God, the universe, source in that person. And there's a piece of it in me. And there is love there and there is common ground. And that is where I begin. And I think that's also, it can be something you can build because not all of us, you know, sometimes we're in a state where we go inside ourselves, I think. And reigniting that habit is something we can do.
That's right.
Okay. So let's get on to mentors. And
I'm just going to make one more comment about that and just say kind of a back link to routine. So I actually put something on my calendar that just connections. And it just reminds me every day, think about, I'll take 10 minutes. Think about people you have not talked to, heard from, or reached out to. And I just scan, come up with about 5 or 10 people, boom, send them a text.
Yeah, I love that. And it's so not again, just
building
text,
things in your routine. Yes. Yeah. And again, it's back to making the strategic decisions of how you're going to leverage your valuable time. So one stat that I talk about in the book, average American spends 2.5 hours a day on social media. That's the average. There are a lot of people that spend way more. And that's not counting those who game. That's not counted as social media. If you count gaming in there, especially for certain, you know, maybe young adults who are males, probably we're talking maybe 8 hours a day. So it's some for them, some of these. But let's say 2.5 hours just on social media that you're just streaming. Not reaching out to people, just posting your stuff, looking at stuff, right? All right. The average person also spends less than 30 minutes a day developing themselves, whether that's working out, reading a book to learn something, anything to develop yourself. On the, you look at an average lifespan in America, it's like 77. Over that time frame, that's 10 years on social media. 10 months developing yourself, 10 months versus 10 years. So just think if you just reverse that and spend 2.5 hours developing yourself or 2.5 hours building connections, 2.5 hours learning versus. So that's the mindset that I'm trying to get people to really think through. How are you leveraging your time to do things like build connections, authentic connections?
Yeah. And you've got this, intentions are one thing, habits are another. They aren't always connected. And that's
really
powerful.
Hold yourself accountable to connect them. And that's what I try to do by using routine, as you asked earlier, using how I'm leveraging my time, building it in. So I'm making sure it gets done.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. You asked about mentors.
Yeah, I am. Okay, so mentors and mentees. And this is something I think some people have never had in their lives. I didn't have a lot of it until about 5 or 6 years ago.
Yeah.
What mistakes do you see coming from people that you mentor? And what mistakes do mentees make sometimes when they choose a mentor? Because I think especially when you're moving through life at all, but I think often when you are facing something on a regular basis, it's really important to have this support structure. And I think mentorship professionally and sort of through your life is really important. But I've seen mistakes. I'm curious what you think.
Yeah, the biggest mistake I see that mentors make is projecting their own sort of thoughts and goals on the person they're mentee or mentoring, you know, versus getting to know the mentee, really getting to know them, trying to understand what do they truly want and helping them achieve that versus projecting what they want as the mentor, what they see. That's the biggest mistake that I see from mentors. And then from mentees, the biggest mistake is Mentees, a lot of them tend to think that a mentor can only be someone who's higher than them in some sort of hierarchical structure, or older than them, more experienced than them, more successful, that type of thing. And that's so far from the truth. And that's why I've always had mentors, because I never saw mentors as in that sort of framework. To me, a mentor is anybody that knows more than me in something, or that has information I don't have, which by definition is going to be everyone. Everyone can be your mentor, because there's no way possible I know what you know, Jill. There's no way.
Right.
So you can be my mentor, right? Jeff, I can't remember his name. Jeff was on here. He's your engineer or something.
Jason.
I guarantee Jason knows a lot of things I don't know, so he can be my mentor.
Yeah.
So not having this strict definition limits people in terms of their ability to gain mentors. And that's the biggest mistake. In my book, I talk about this model called the multi-level mentor. It's trying to bring to life that you should always be doing a 360-degree scan of people around you to build your mentor network. And you should be aggressive at building that network. Because not only will your mentor help bring information to you that you don't have, but they'll bring perspective to you don't have, and they'll bring connections to you don't have. So you get a threefold build just in there alone. Your network, by definition, is going to expand. So I would really encourage everyone listening, don't use the lens that a mentor has to be someone you perceive as more advanced than you or better than you. No, a mentor is anyone that can bring you new perspective, bring you new information. So by definition, that's anyone can be your mentor. That also helps us not see things or see people in a stratified class.
Yeah.
Everyone should be able to choose the path they want. Just because someone chooses to be a music teacher doesn't mean that they're less successful than me as the vice president of the international supply chain of a Fortune 200 organization. She's influencing thousands of children and bringing them happiness. Who's to say that's not more important than what I did? So when we don't see people with that lens, and we just see everyone as valuable perspective, it all of a sudden flattens the field. And not only do you see yourself as more valuable, you see everyone else as bringing more value to you.
Yeah, I much prefer that to multi-level marketing. All right. So we're going to have to wrap our time here in the next five or 6 minutes, but I want to talk about, you ran for public office a few years ago.
Yes.
And you've told me that that is a direct reflection of your values.
Yes.
Let's talk about that. And how did it change your life?
Wow. You know, I decided to run for office in 2018. Because today there still is, I mean, unfortunately, but there was a lot of concern, a lot of fear, and a lot of hopelessness. And I felt people in my community needed hope. And I tried to inspire others to get involved and to run for office. I wasn't prepared to run at that time, but I was prepared to help. And, you know, we had a candidate for this specific, for all the seats that we were trying to get people to run for, but something happened in her personal life. She couldn't do it. And there came a point where, you know, I was leading the volunteer effort to recruit people to run and convince them that it wasn't hopeless and we all had to get engaged. But at some point you got to walk the talk.
Yeah.
At some point, you got to get off the bench. You can't just coach from the bench. Sometimes you got to play. And when there was no one else, people asked me to do it. And at some point, you have to step in and go in the game, be accountable, and take action. So I did. And it was a great experience. great, great experience. But you asked, what did something change my life? I don't know if it changed my life in terms of, you know, well, it did change some things. I'll say that. It did change my career, because by running for office, it took me off my career trajectory. And I was in line to be promoted to the C-suite, report director to CEO of a Fortune 200 company. And because I ran for office, that didn't happen. So that changed my career path, didn't change my life. In fact, I would say if it changed my life, it gave me more confidence that doing the right thing is good for me, because I felt great about myself. And the other thing that it did is it introduced me to a much larger network. And we talked about networks earlier. So there were people that I met through that experience that I would never probably have met before. People that volunteered for my campaign. People that I went door knocked at their house. People who had never met me, didn't agree with what at least they thought I stood for. But then after talking to me for an hour, I actually started crying and talking about how they just wished that anybody else would come by their house just to have a conversation with them.
Yeah.
So when you first asked, I was like, I don't know if it changed my life, but as I started talking, again, I'm talking to myself and talking to you, I talked myself into you, it did. Because it showed me that even today, when things seem very hopeless for many of us, very sad for many of us, I still know there are a lot of people out there that just need someone to listen to them and to connect with them.
There's a lot.
And if we can find a way to do that, we could get enough majority of people in this country to want to do the right thing.
100%.
And so I still have hope, is what I would say. As I go back and think about those, many of those conversations, I remember them. And people starting off, I don't want to talk to you. I know what you stand for. And then I talked to them and looked them in the eye and showed them I was authentic. And literally after an hour, they were crying. And change their whole viewpoint.
Yeah.
There is still hope. So that's what changed for me.
I think there's always hope. And I think there's, when COVID started, I remember I was like, I'm going to start a hope bank. And if anybody needs it, I got it for you. Yes. You were a couple years ahead of me. But I think it's really fascinating too. I think there are choices, right? There's choices around some of this. And maybe this is a whole different episode, but there are choices around some of this, which is you can choose to believe people are mostly good and maybe they're misinformed, or maybe they just haven't walked the part of the path. And I was listening to something recently and they said, you can choose that people in the world are mostly good or that they are not. And how you answer that question for yourself will dictate your future.
Yes.
And really, like, I think that is around hope. You and I are definitely people though. So that's one there. Okay. So we are going to have to wrap, unfortunately. What did I miss? How do we land this plane?
Well, I want to go back and just say, I love how we ended off, because I think for a lot of your listeners that are fighting a chronic illness, I know that there are times where it does feel hopeless when you're in tremendous pain and you know that it's not going to get better and you're just going to have to manage this for the rest of your life. And what I would just ask you is to always remember that as long as you're here, there is hope, and you can just continue to focus on yourself, focus on managing your time during that day to do the little things to manage your well-being. And remember, there's not just physical well-being, it's mental and spiritual well-being. And having a plan and starting, first of all, having a plan will make your well-being feel better. Starting to execute against your plan little achievements every day helps your well-being feel better, gives you something to focus on, gives you hope. So what I'd ask you is, don't lose that hope. And remember that you're the leader of your life. There's no one else who's going to lead it for you. Yeah, if you don't have a plan, you can't get there. But there's no one else that's going to lead your life for you. There's no one else who's going to manage your time for you. There's no one else who's going to drive the hope in inspiration and self-belief that you need. You have to do that. Be the CEO of your life.
I think this is where we land the plane. Where can people find you online? Or
they can find me at, if you type in actually the title of the book, makeyourdestinyhappen.com, it'll take you to our website. You'll also find the book. If you're on YouTube, if you type in my name, you'll find my podcast. If I have a very unique name. I think I'm the only Donzel Allen Leggett in the world besides my son. So Donzel Leggett, very unique. If you type that in, you'll find us. We're on LinkedIn. We're also on Facebook and Instagram. But most importantly, go visit our website, check us out. And by the way, our audiobook will be out soon. If it's not out by the time that this podcast is released, it'll be out very, very soon. So makeyourdestinyhappen.com. Donzel Leggett, and we'll send Jill also all of our tags and everything in the show notes as well.
Amazing. I love it. Thank you so much for being so generous with your time, as always. And next time I'm going to buy lunch for this one.
SpondyCast was made possible by donations from the Spondylitis Association of America's individual members and our show's corporate sponsor, AbbVie. Since our founding in 1983, the Spondylitis Association of America has been the face, voice, and leading nationwide nonprofit educating, empowering, and advocating for people living with spondyloarthritis. Through our extensive work with patients, the medical community, and partners, we provide information and resources to help people impacted by the disease live better lives and champion research to find a cure.